Patristic Nectar Publications is pleased to present A Word from the Holy Fathers by His Grace, Bishop Irenae of London and Western Europe. These short meditations reveal the ancient wisdom of the Church Fathers and apply it to 21st century Christian living. And now, His Grace, Bishop Irenae.
It is from his second letter on the Lord's Resurrection, or his second sermon on the Lord's Resurrection, his sermon numbered 72 in his collected writings. And as a sermon on the Resurrection, we most often, naturally enough, associate it with the time of Pascha, and so read it then. However, for St. Leo, as so many of the Fathers, the resurrection of the Lord, which we celebrate at that time of great and most holy Passover, is the fulfillment of the life begun in the human flesh at the Nativity. The incarnation, which we are preparing now to celebrate, to feast, in which we are preparing our bodies to revel through fasting and preparation, this incarnation at the Nativity is what gives flesh, quite literally, to the hope manifest at the Resurrection. So St. Leo's 72nd sermon, his second on the Resurrection, has profound fruit for our approach to Christ's Nativity. And I would like us to look today at the second chapter of his 72nd letter, wherein St. Leo addresses Christ taking upon himself our nature for our salvation. Let me begin by simply reading from the text of St. Leo. "When the whole body of mankind," he says, "had fallen in our first parents, the merciful God purposed so to succour, through his only begotten Jesus Christ, his creatures made after his image, that the restoration of our nature should not be effected apart from it, and that our new estate should be in advance upon our original position." If I stop for a moment just here, St. Leo has a profound sense for the continuity of creation and redemption. We, all of us, he says, fell in our first parents, not that we have in some sense inherited a guilt for their crimes, but because as one race, one flesh fashioned by the hands of God, we are bound up in the lives of one another. We cannot sin without affecting our neighbor. We cannot be redeemed without affecting our neighbor. So that moment of first transgression of primal sin is something which affects all of us as the one race fashioned by Christ. And when in that race we had fallen in our first parents, God, says St. Leo, purposed our salvation. Our redemption begins at that very moment. It is not long awaited, as if God forgot to redeem or took time, waited before being merciful. Salvation begins at that moment. And what he purposes at that moment, says St. Leo, is not salvation in some general, generic sense, but there in Eden, before Adam, before Eve, he purposes our salvation in Jesus Christ. He does this, St. Leo says in the passage we've just read, so that we, creatures fashioned after his image, should be restored in his image. We who have a nature fashioned by God should have God himself refashion our nature. He carries on in the following way. "Blessed are we if we had not fallen from that which God had made us, but more blessed still if we remain that which he has remade us. It was much to have received form from Christ. It is more to have a substance in Christ." Here St. Leo shows not only that we have been restored, that the sin first committed in Adam, in Eve, the sin which we continually recreate and continue in our own lives, not only is this met, forgiven, redeemed. Not only are we restored to some, if we can use the expression, pre-fallen state, much more than this, we are raised up to a newness of life in Christ himself. As St. Leo says, we would have been blessed had we never fallen in our sin, but we are more blessed if we do not fall from this new state into which Christ has fashioned us. It was good to have been created by Christ, but now we are united with him, drawn into him. As he says in the continuing section, we were taken up into its own proper self by that divine nature which condescended to those limitations which loving kindness dictated, and which yet incurred no sort of change. We have been taken up into that very nature, which destroyed not what was his in what was ours, nor what was ours in what was his, which made the person of the Godhead and of the manhood so one in itself that by coordination of weakness and power the flesh could not be rendered inviolable through the Godhead, nor the Godhead passable through the flesh. We were taken up by that nature which did not break off the branch from the common stock of our race, and yet excluded all taint of the sin that has passed upon all men. That is to say, weakness and mortality, which were not sin but the penalty of sin, were undergone by the Redeemer of the world in the way of punishment, that they might be reckoned as the price of redemption. St. Leo's words are a powerful witness to just what is accomplished in the incarnation of the Word of the Father. By coming to us in the flesh, he has, as St. Leo has written, united to himself what was ours, yet what is also mystically, wonderfully his. And he unites it in a manner that sanctifies, redeems, transforms, but does not destroy it. And this letter, to my mind, is a wonderful example of precisely why the ornate theological discussions and disputes which so enwrapped the early church were important pastorally, practically. They can often seem to have been quite metaphysical, almost academic debates, discussions of divine natures, human, divine. How are consubstantial realities to be perceived? How can God undergo change and yet be unchanging? How can he suffer and yet be impassible? A lot of students confronted, a lot of readers confronted with the theological disputes of the early church find them quite ornate, overwhelming, abstract. And yet St. Leo's letter, his homily here, reminds us of the immense pastoral value of these intricate disputes. It is by knowing that Christ took our nature to himself, but in a manner that did not destroy what he had taken, that we are able to find in him a Lord of love who heals us and does not cause us to be something other than our human creation. We are united to his nature, but we remain always his creature. This is the very substance of our joy in the incarnation. Christ takes to himself the branch of human nature, yet he does not break it off from the tree of life. By uniting it to himself, he removes, as St. Leo says, all taint of sin that had been present therein, so that we find only true life united with divinity. Christ undergoes, as it were, all the consequences of sin, as if, to use St. Leo's phrase, as if a punishment, and yet not a punishment, for Christ is guilty of nothing. But in this way, he says, they are reckoned as the price of our redemption. St. Leo continues, what therefore in all of us is the heritage of condemnation, in Christ is the mystery of godliness. In taking human flesh, in taking on a fully human life, the eternal Son of the Father draws us to himself in the most intimate way possible. Sin is overcome, not by some legalistic decree, but because God has joined our nature to his own, has raised it into his own, and in so doing expunged from it all unholiness, all sin, all transgression. This is the mystery of godliness that the incarnation enables. When Christ takes flesh in Bethlehem, my nature is transformed, it is changed. The mystery of redemption is made visible, tangible. And this is the hope into which we are drawn, which we await in this time of the fast. This is the hope of the birth of Christ, which leads, as St. Leo was so well aware, to his resurrection and to his glory. May we join him soon in the cave, at the manger, but may we join him also at the cross, at his ascension, that we too may be raised up in glory to the Father, the Creator of all.
We hope you have enjoyed listening to A Word from the Holy Fathers by His Grace Bishop Irenae of London and Western Europe, offered to you by Patristic Nectar Publications, nourishing the spiritually thirsty with the sweet teachings of the Holy Fathers.